Welcome back to the Weekly Manga Podcast. This is the podcast where we talk about all of your favorite ongoing Japanese manga. This week we'll be covering the controversial ending of Oshinoko, giving our deep dive opinions on that one. We're also going to be covering the new series from We Never Learn author Taishi Tsutsui, Sid Craft, Love is a Mystery. And we'll finish off with some cute and fun Mane Mane Nichi Nichi. All that manga news and more coming right up. Hello again, my name is Bruce. I am the proprietor of the White Gray Black YouTube channel. This week I am joined again by my constant co-host Gautam.
Hello, hello.
A special shout out and thanks to our Patreon subscribers, Yaji Black. If you want to have your name read at the top of the episode, see some bonus content, check out patreon.com/WGBmanga. It's only $3 to start. Gautam, let's have a pretty long discussion here about Oshinoko.
Yeah.
About, three months ago, what would you have said to me about Oshinoko?
Like, how the plot would go?
Are you, no, like, what were your feelings on the quality?
I thought it was great.
And the execution of it 12 or 15 chapters ago, yeah.
I would have just said, Aka's a fucking genius, he knows how to write, and I love it.
Okay, so...
And I would have said it like, maybe lost me a little bit from the start, but I thought it was still, like, incredibly high-quality work.
Mm-hmm. Okay, now, tell me how you feel about it after the last 10 or so chapters and the ending.
I'm confused as to what happened. Like, did something happen to him? Did he burn out, really hard, really fast? Like, what happened?
That's the thing, is that usually... Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I guess we'll preface this with saying that I think the ending of Oshinoko is bad. Like,
that was terrible. That was terrible.
Like, for reference, we both thought that the end, like the last, I don't know, 20 or so chapters of Kaguya-sama, right? Aka Akasaka's last work. I thought that was a decline in quality, but it was never bad. It was like, well, this is not as good as the rest of the series. The last 20 chapters or so are clearly not as high quality. Some weird stuff goes on. It ends. It's cute. It's happy. It's fine. The rest of Kaguya is amazing. The end of it is fine.
Yeah, and this is back when I used to, like, consume more, like, discourse around the manga I read, is I thought people were like, conflating how bad Kaguya's ending was, because the ending was great. The final arc was a little weaker than the rest of, like, Aka's stuff, but it was still good. It was still good, and I think people just say it's, like, terrible, terrible, but... I don't know what people are saying about this, Bruce. You'll have to fill me in, but
it's bad. Nobody likes it. Everyone thinks it's bad, and they're right. Like, there's no argument for me. Like, this is not I think the best comment. Let me see. If I can read this exactly so that I can get it right. I saw a comment that I think covered exactly the way I felt about it. Yes, here we go. On Reddit, on the final thread, this is from a user called Egavins. I'm going to read this basically exactly as you posted it because I think it says it pretty better than I could given an hour. Quote, I've made this comparison before and it feels even more apt now. This ending is like the bad end one gets after picking the wrong choice in a visual novel. It's got it all. A drawn out, gratuitously painful death for the MC, complete with him taking a moment to openly criticize the wisdom of his final choice as if he's hinting to players what to do differently on the next playthrough. All we're missing is the Taiga Dojo. I don't know what that means. Quote, followed by one chapter of misery porn and a final chapter speed running through some of the remaining loose ends in the most perfunctory way possible. When I read this, I don't feel like I'm watching the culmination of a 4-year journey. I don't feel like I've watched the final beat of an unfolding tragedy. I feel like I need to go through my previous save files and find the dialogue choice that lets me see the good ending. End quote.
That's so well stated. Yeah. It's exactly right. I have no idea what happened here.
Like, in less words, this feels like the wrong ending, which I think is there's something to be said about the right ending executed not great. Something like Attack on Titan, which I think the end was fine, but maybe needed a little bit more time. That's the right ending for that series, and it was just a little quick. People were really hard on that, which I definitely disagree with. I thought that was the right ending for the series. All the choices were correct. I thought it needed to be two chapters and not one, would be my kind of one complaint about it. Need a little bit more time to breathe. This is just the wrong ending for Oshinoko. Like, and it's so disappointing because, like we said, basically up until... I would say right up until Aqua confronts his dad at the cliff or whatever, that chapter on, this series fucking sucks. Before then, I think it's excellent. Like, right up until that chapter and everything else, which is really only the last, what, six or seven chapters, but yeah.
Yeah, so, and I guess we can use this space to get a little specific on our complaints, and I think I have a few, right? It's... One, the little girl with the crow stuff never really got expanded on.
That's almost the most visual novel part of it. Like, I don't know how many visual novels you've played. I've only gone through, like, maybe two or three. But it's like, I've seen other people play it, and I've heard people talk about it, and I've watched anime adapted from it. There's always the weird, magical, like, oh, there's a magical person who's really, like, it's a crutch for writers to be like, I don't know how to... explain this or do this properly, so I will put a magical thing in, and it doesn't really matter. It just gives me a way to do magical things more. Like,
but I, like, what was her intent? Like, what was the plan there? I don't know. Yeah. But, and we never got that answer. Her inclusion in the series was, like, interesting when she showed up, but nothing was done with her.
Yeah.
I think... the ending tragedy moment where Aqua, like, takes his revenge, mm-hmm. It just fell flat in every way.
It was stupid. We talked about it, I think, on the pod, because that was 2 months ago.
I even said, like, if Aqua dies by the end of this, I think it would be a terrible ending.
Yeah.
Because so much legwork was put in to his kind of, like, salvation in regards to the bonds he made, right? Being prioritized mm-hmm. over revenge. There was so much interpersonal relationship building, Aqua helping people out, them helping Aqua out in return, fully getting to understand, like, Akane especially understands, like, how Aqua operates, like, how his brain works, mm-hmm. his traumas, his baggage, all that stuff. And there was no point to any of it because his actions didn't change. And the annoying part is that he was shown to be growing from these experiences he's had with other people.
Yeah.
When in actuality, and it never said anything about him staying the, like, I never got the vibe that he's, like, staying the course, intent on revenge at all costs and disregarding his interpersonal relationships. He cared about them. Yeah. He cared about them, and it was given screen time. And it was only given screen time because it sets itself up for an ending where he realizes that this is not the play, you know?
Yeah. Well, I think you're exactly right. And to reinforce your point, I think that that moment, those couple of chapters specifically with Aqua and his dad on the cliffside, could be redeemed by, like, one simple choice, which is that Aqua can get there, say he's out for revenge, you know, do damage to both of them. And then, you know, maybe he, like, throws him off a cliff and he's hanging there. And Aqua's like, I've changed my mind. Like, I know that I have things to live for. I'm going to go. And his dad drags him into the ocean. And they both die. Like, that works because that is Aqua choosing to try to live. And then the tragedy is that he couldn't. When instead in this one, the tragedy is that he went against all the character development we think we've been seeing previously to make it sadder. I just don't get it.
He basically is a scumbag. And I'm not saying, like, he's a scumbag in that he chose to kill this guy and sacrifice the happiness of, like, all of the people who loved him.
Yeah.
Because clearly the screen time spent on his interpersonal relationships were meaningless to him because he went ahead and did it anyway. I don't know. That just, it feels like a slap in the face.
Yeah. Well, and there was no, and that's the thing that kind of bothers me most is that there was no, like, all, like you mentioned, all of the sort of personal relationship things he's developed, all of the caring he's done for Bikamachi and his sister and all the other girls and people that he's been involved with and helped out. In the moment that he kills himself and his dad, he doesn't think about that at all. He like says one thing where it's like, no, you know, if I live, Ruby will be shunned and I can't have that. There's no like, I wish I didn't have to do this. I wish it didn't have to be this way. I love all these people, but this is the only way. I have to do it like this. There was none of that, which like, again, all these little writing changes make big differences. Instead, he's just like, got to be like this. And then does it, you know, the stupid thing we talked about last time where he cuts himself first and then jumps with his dad off the cliff, which is like, bro, come on.
And then the final chapter is just, and then yeah. They all moved on with their lives.
Yeah,
and
I mean, we can, sucked. We can click through it real quick because there's some specific complaints I have about this final chapter, which again, feels like the kind of visual novel ending you get at the end where it says fucking try again. Like it does not feel like a the end thing. Like,
yeah, because it wraps everything up so unsatisfyingly.
And it just, speed runs. It's just like Ruby was very sad that Aqua died, but she could lie about it and keep going. But we chose to live. It's like, yeah, like not to, I don't want to, I don't even know how to explain this. Most people choose to live, I guess is what I will say. That's not an uncommon thing to choose, even when you are sad, right? Like,
we chose to live, just to give Aqua some credit with this terrible ending, is more so, it's like we continued onwards without wallowing in depression.
Yeah. Yeah.
But still, it's lame.
Yeah, but it's, again, it's just this generic, like, we believed if we do our best, we'll find a reason for living. And it's like, have we not? Like, we have been going over the reason for these people to live for the past 4 years. Like, I understand what Ruby wants. I understand what Akane wants. I understand what Memcho wants. Like, I understand these characters because they're incredibly well written. And then the ending is just like, we kept going generically. And then, like, everyone is here, and there's just, like, new girls on stage with Bikamachi, and Kana is, like, watching from the sidelines and happy, and...
We didn't get resolution on any of these characters.
Yeah,
really.
No. It just speedruns the end and doesn't resolve anything, and it's like, oh, it's like the darker things get, the brighter she shines. This is not anything we have ever been shown. Nothing we've ever been shown in this series makes that true. Like,
it's a terrible takeaway. Like, that's like a terrible, terrible message to send. I don't know. I feel like it's not optimistic. It's just like she is better when she is suffering.
Which is a weird and like I kind of get the mirroring of their mom here, of Ai. Where like she was also clearly one of these people who was like deeply pained and very troubled, and her life was very dark, and she brought smiles to all of these people, like including Aqua and Ruby in their past lives and current lives. Like, so
I
get that.
But Ruby's arc was being different from her mom, you know?
Yeah. Well, and doesn't she say in one of the chapters before this, Ruby's like, I'm going to be different from my mom. Like, doesn't she say that directly? So like
100%. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that just doesn't happen. Like, you just don't see that at all. She's just like, I'd be different from my mom. And then this is basically the next thing we get her doing. Like, I don't know. It's like,
yeah, because her brother killed himself. I don't know why he did that.
Yeah.
Like, Aqua, what the fuck, man?
I don't know. Like, and the weird thing is, I feel like normally if you were to blame something like this on burnout, you normally see burnout appear sort of like, oh, you know, that arc wasn't as good. And then it'll be like, oh, the next arc kind of was a little bit worse. And then you're like, oh, maybe there's one good arc. And then, oh, it gets worse again. I mean, like, we've seen, like, Horikoshi with My Hero, right? Like, the first half of, like, we talked about this when it ended earlier in the year, right? The first half of My Hero Academia is fucking great. And then it slowly gets worse and worse. Like, that, to me, feels like a burnout, backsliding, bad ending. This is
I could see the burnout for Horikoshi happening in real time.
Yeah,
but
for sure.
I couldn't see it here.
But this is just, we get to the last six or seven chapters and it's just suddenly bad. Like because legitimately, I think we talked about it. I guess it would maybe be the start of this year. The chapter where Aqua and Ruby confront their dad in the room and show him like the videos and the stuff of Ai being like, oh no, I really loved him, but I felt like I had to protect him and that's why I pushed him away. And that's the reason that he ended up, you know, sending the guy to kill her. Like, that's one of the best chapters I've read this year. Like, I
love it. Should have ended there with a public execution.
Yeah, the public execution would have been a great, like, even with, like, no resolution again, like, if that was the end, that's kind of, like, fucking awesome. Like,
and when we say public execution, we mean, like, their social status being, like, in shambles and put in jail. Like, that, I feel like that's a natural, like, that's the perfect revenge for Oshinoko.
Yeah.
This is, I don't know, this just threw everything Aka built in this series out the window.
Yeah, it's so sad, because this is, I mean, this was, if this ended well, this is going to go down as, like, oh yeah, that's one of those series everybody's got to read. Like, it's just, it's great. It's a super good critique of, you know, Japanese media culture, you know, from every angle. It, you know, it's interesting, it's cool, and then the end is just like, not worth it, don't read it. Like, it sucks, but it's that bad, right? Like, if this was just like a mediocre ending, but like this ending, like, maybe it doesn't erase all of the good work in it, but it feels really bad in the week that it happened to talk about it and be like, man, it was so good for 3 years and 9 months.
You know what sucks is that I think it does erase all the good work in it, in my eyes, because I... clearly these characters were all just dumpstered at the end, right? Like, I don't think I will... I'll think back on Kaguya fondly every now and again. I think back and I'm like, oh, that's a goated romance series.
Yeah, Kaguya's great. Absolutely,
I will probably never think about Oshinoko.
I will think about it and I'll be like, man, damn, or that ending is what I'll think about. Yeah, all I'll think about is how bad the ending was. Like,
I know,
man,
that's a shame.
I hope... man, it sucks because I hope the anime... changes.
That's everyone's hopes. It never happens.
I know. There's a double-edged sword of people. You know, we went through years and years of anime changing endings and people hating it, and so now anime, I think, is very much locked into adapting manga pretty straightforward as far as the story goes. And I think it's a double-edged sword because sometimes manga that are adapted are not very good, and you need to make changes to make them better. I don't know. And then we get, I don't know, like the lamest last three pages I've ever seen, where it's just like, it's an incredibly fun job. I'm going for a future that mama for me. I'm off now. Like, literally, I can see the game screen at the end here being like, try again. Like,
yeah,
you got ending B. Like, this is, I don't know.
I think I can forgive, like, not using the god character that was introduced. That's fine, whatever.
Yeah.
I think the biggest sin, though, was just throwing away all of the character development for everyone.
Yeah, for sure. Because you're absolutely right that, and we talked about this for years. I mean, we've been doing this podcast for 2 years, and every time we've brought up Oshinoko, we've talked about how, like, the trajectory for Aqua seems to be that he thinks he's all about revenge, but he's developing emotional connections. He's helping people out. He's seeing how positive that is for him and beautiful and stuff. And so we think that he's going to be, you know, he'll get to the end, he'll think that he needs to take revenge, and he'll make the choice. He would either make the choice to say, no, I have other things to live for, I'm not going to only seek revenge, or he will try and then fail, and that's the tragedy, right? Like, that's, which is classic. But
yeah,
I don't know.
I think this is a series ending that punishes the reader for their investment in the series.
Yeah,
is how it feels. I think that's why it feels so inherently unsatisfying. It's like, it punishes you for paying attention and having ideas on how this goes, because it's like you do amazing work all year, and for your final paper, you just phone it in for a C. Yeah. I don't know.
Well, I mean, especially for us, and for, I guess I'll only speak for myself. Like, for me, especially, the thing that I really like about stories in general are, like, characters and, you know, like, I've mentioned that before, like, characters are the prime thing that
we
I
theorized.
Look at. Yeah, well, yeah. And the thing that feels so bad about Oshinoko is that, again, like you mentioned, I'm invested in these characters, but also I'm thinking about, like, oh, you know, like, I know, I've read enough stories, I know where it looks like these are going, am I going to be surprised at the end by where they resolve, or is it going to be classic, or, you know, classic with a twist, or what's going to be different, how are they going to all resolve, and you're really curious about all these things, because, you know, following a characters on a journey for 4 years, yeah, you want to know where they end up, where they go, how their arcs resolve, and to be honest, Oshinoko resolved exactly one character's arc, and it was Aqua's, and it was bad. And so, like, none of the other characters got a resolution. Like, they all are left in suspense, which is so, so, so unsatisfying.
And Aqua's arc sucked.
It's exactly. It was a bad ending.
Yeah. do you, like, that's why I'm, like, curious if something happened. Like, I, because it feels like it did. It's so bafflingly different in the quality of Akka's writing.
Yeah,
right?
And you can't even, like, people are, here's what people are going to say that I'm going to push back against. People are going to say, oh, Akka can't write an ending. I wholeheartedly disagree with that, because Akka has shown time and time again that for specific arcs, he knows how to resolve those. He knows how to resolve character stuff in Kaguya, right? All the stuff with Ishigami, like every arc with Ishigami, and it resolved in a satisfying way. Character growths reached a resolution, you know, maybe not a full character resolution, but, you know, individual problems are resolved. The, like,
the final chapter of Kaguya is slapped. It was amazing.
It's good. And stuff like the, I mean, the confession could be seen as an ending in Kaguya. I mean, it doesn't happen at the end, but, like, that is a resolution of a massive, you know, 120 chapter arc or whatever. Akka can write endings. Like, he understands how to resolve character arcs. I've seen him do it time and time again. He does it in Oshinoko. He does it with the characters in the stage play. He does it with the manga author. He does it, you know, there's tons of people and things here that he knows how to write an ending. So I feel like
something happened. I don't know.
Just one of those guys where he's like, yeah, I guess I'll end it in about 20 chapters. And once he sees the end, he's just like, nah, I don't know. Yeah, well, I guess I'm done. Whatever. I'm moving on. Like, or maybe somebody comes to him and is like, hey, your next thing should be this. Because, I mean, he's starting a new thing like this week or next week. So maybe it's like when a new thing starts, maybe he just can't handle two at the same time. I don't know. I mean, he used to. Yeah, I don't know. It's very, very strange. It feels weirder than someone who's up. You know, historically known for bad endings.
The thing is, if he ended earlier, like right after they in the skyscraper with their dad, like that would have been a great ending.
And to be honest, that's
the baffling part.
Yeah, that, like, is a great resolution to the whole thing. Is that he literally wrote a good ending to the story and then kept going and threw it all away. Like it's wild.
It's like very strange, man. I think for authors I don't know, I can just say that they missed the mark.
Yeah.
And they maybe did the character development that led to all of this accidentally. And they were just good at that and they didn't know how to end it. But I struggle to use that same excuse with Akka because I've been reading his stuff for a while and I think he's very intelligent. But maybe he just did shit the bed. Who knows? But it feels I don't know, something happened. Maybe. Well,
and the other thing is we haven't really mentioned Mengo Yokoyari, the artist. And I will say, historically, the one thing that I have consumed from her is Scum's Wish, which I adored. I know a lot of people didn't like it. It's basically kind of like bad people doing bad things and realizing at the end that they were doing bad things. And it's a very kind of melodramatic and tragic type story, which I think I actually see a lot of her storytelling in Oshinoko. But also, Scum's Wish ends really like satisfyingly. Like, it isn't necessarily a positive ending, but it ends in a way that you go, okay, everyone has reached a place and is moving on and is, you know, they're gonna be better for it even if they're not better now. And I don't even think that if Akka had just like handed Mengo Yokoyari the scripts and said write an ending for this, that I think she would have done better. Like, I wish
the theme that wasn't the through line through Oshinoko, the it was that, you know, like the people around you can't get rid of the trauma, but they can help you through it, you know, and slowly and surely you will heal over time. And it's a tough and long process, but it'll happen. And then the conclusion being, actually, it can't. And your suffering makes you a better performer on the stage. So maybe that's.
Yeah. Well, and the other.
What are you talking about?
That kind of ties into what I think the other big theme is, which is this idea of sort of lying to other people to lift them up when you yourself are suffering, and how that affects you and is actually maybe not the right thing to do, even though it seems, you know, positive. And that also just kind of doesn't get resolved either. Like it basically ends with like, well, you know, Aqua's been lying to everybody and then he died, so it's wrong. And then Ruby keeps, you know, lying and covering her pain and performing, and it's good again. And it's just like I don't know. Like, nothing thematically works with these last seven chapters or so.
And that part is even weirder because Ruby's arc, where she decides to be different than Ai, keep her friends close and be honest when she needs to be, that wasn't that long ago. That was like a few months back.
I mean, yeah, this year. There have been, you know, whatever, 35 chapters this year. Yeah, that was this year, so.
It's like, it's like contradictory. This ending is contradictory to what Aka wrote a few months ago.
It literally is, yeah. I think that's the big thing, is it just like, whereas Kaguya was like, well, the chapters aren't as good, but it's the same story. This feels like, I can't say it better. It feels like a bad ending where you should be able to try again and get a different, better one. This is the one where it's like, oh, you chose to kill the guy when you could have chose to not kill the guy. And that leads to him dying. And it's like, well, everybody lives on, but the main character's dead. So, okay, try again. Like, seriously, it just isn't like, it isn't the right ending. Like, it's just the wrong ending. It sucks.
I don't know. That's unfortunate. It's unfortunate it ended this way. Well, yeah. It is what it is.
I really hope we see more Mango Yokoyari do art for another series. I
know she's
one
great.
Thing that
she's
I have no complaints about is how good the art was consistently in Oshinoko. I think it's amazing. I think the art, even, I mean, all the bad stuff, all the bad writing in the last chapter does not take away from how good a lot of the art is in this last chapter. So
you're right. The art was phenomenal all the way through. The writing at the end was so bad. It was confusing to me.
Yeah.
But I think that's my takeaway, is that I'm confused as to what happened here.
It's unfortunate, because if we had gotten kind of like a just okay ending, like Kaguya, where it was like, well, it's not as good as the rest of it, but you know, it ended, it was fine. I think you could hardly recommend Oshinoko for people to read, to watch, to consume, or whatever. You said, it's just like, if people say like, oh, should I read Oshinoko? I would be like, no, like,
don't. No, yeah, I'd say
Stop reading, like literally put it down at the chapter where they like finish confronting their dad in the penthouse or whatever. Like literally stop reading right there and be like, that's the end. Just imagine what happens to the rest of the characters, because if you keep reading, it will not be good.
It's a shame, because I think there's like a lot of excellent critique of the entertainment industry in there.
Everything before the parts we're talking about is awesome. Like I would rate Oshinoko like very damn near a 10 out of 10. Except for these last couple of chapters. Like, I think it's phenomenal. I think that pulling people in, like, I think it was one of the best chapter ones of like all time in manga. Like, holy shit. I mean, it's a, like, you know, it's a mini series. It's like about 200 pages or whatever, but like an amazing chapter one, and like an absolute wild twist. I think the critiques of the entertainment industry were valid and on point, and a very consistently well-written, well-expressed thing of these people who are taken advantage of and pushed in ways that they shouldn't be pushed, and the dangers of being a public figure and all of these types of things. Yeah, I think Oshinoko is fucking amazing. But the ending is so bad. It just kind of ruins it all.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I think Aqua is like maybe one of the lamest characters in fiction. He sucks.
Yeah.
What the fuck was that?
Oh, and then end of 2023, I would have been like, Aqua's a great character. Yeah, like for sure. Like, everybody's awesome. Everybody went full of great characters in Oshinoko.
That's because we thought, I guess mistakenly, that he was developing as a character, and that he would have a character arc, when in actuality, he wasn't developing and didn't have a character arc.
Yeah. I wonder, it's so weird to be like, maybe Aqua doesn't understand tragedy, but it's like he does, because like Ai's death was tragic, and like so many other good tragic things were exposed. It's so weird, because
he does, like we saw in the ending, he's like, oh yeah, Ruby, it sucked and she cried a lot, but she continued to live. It's like he just speed ran that tragedy, I guess.
Yeah, it's just it feels so weird, like we've said before, because it isn't this like slow backslide into like, oh, they're losing the, you know, they're losing the thread, they're losing the story. It's just, it's good. And then like, he just makes the bad decision of having Aqua go up on that cliff, stab himself first, and throw himself off the cliff with his dad. And suddenly nothing makes sense and nothing is good. Like, it's so weird. Like, I don't know. It's just like literally everything is good before then. Like, everything is fucking amazing in this series before then. And then they get there and it's just wrong and bad. And it's like, I guess maybe you're like, if you just, I mean, everybody makes mistakes. Maybe if it just so happens that the one big mistake you make is at the very end of your story, and that's where you happen to, you know, every series has a bad arc or a bad plot point or something. Maybe just Aka just got unlucky and his bad arc and plot point, it was the last 10 chapters of Oshinoko, as opposed to happening earlier in the series.
I don't know. It's like, it doesn't make sense, because Aka intentionally wrote Aqua's character arc to be a slow journey of understanding that revenge is not the answer and the interpersonal relationships and the people you help is. And then he forgot at the end that that was what he had built over 200 chapters. And then it's like, okay, actually, he does. Aqua hasn't learned anything.
Yeah.
His revenge is most important to him. And his connections to other human beings have always been secondary. Okay.
Well,
That's fine, I guess. Whatever.
Well, and I wonder, because we didn't read a whole lot of his other series that was going on during this time that got canceled, right? The, I don't even remember the name of it. The, like, love...
The
like, you know, the in-ear love thing where two people are trying to date, but then they have coaches in their ear telling them what to do or whatever, that series. Because I thought that series was kind of boring most of the time. Like, that wasn't... Like, I thought the characters were interesting, but it took too long to get going for me. So maybe because Kaguya was ahead of its time a little bit, I think. It was the...
And Aqua just knows how to write. He's genuinely funny. And as we saw in Oshinoko, you said it was like a 10 out of 10 till these like last few months chapters. But it's like Aqua is just that good.
Yeah.
So that's why this is a confusing thing. Anyway.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I don't know what else to say.
We'll never know why it happened this way, but it did. And it sucked. So.
Yep.
It is what it is.
So he has a new series. It's a fantasy romance, starting either this, I think it's probably like next week. If we don't get an official translation, it might be 2 weeks for us to get a translation, but I'll end with this. How interested are you to continue reading manga published by Aqua Akasaka after this?
I don't know, because I know his new series will probably be good because he is a talented writer and just very smart, I think. But I don't know, I feel like weirdly betrayed by this.
I'm in the exact same boat where it's like, yeah, I think I'm gonna write it, but unless it's like, wow, this is the whole time in the back of my mind I'm gonna be like, this is gonna go 200 chapters and it's gonna end awfully, because apparently like I'm gonna be worried about that the whole time I'm reading, and he's going to lure me in again with ending arcs and character stuff appropriately, like he always does. And we're going to get to the end and I'm going to be like, okay, he says it's ending in 5 chapters and I'm going to be worried the whole time. I don't know. He needs a short, I think 2.5 year run with a good ending. And people be like, okay, he can do it. I think essentially Aqua has, I guess if you're following all of the series he's done, right. His first one was it called Instant Bullet or?
Yeah. Instant Bullet.
Yeah. Instant Bullet, I've heard, has an unsatisfying ending. I think that got axed. I don't remember exactly.
Yeah, that got the axe. So,
which again,
I can forgive
an axe series with a bad ending is. I will not blame an author for an axe series with a bad ending. Kaguya, you know, like we mentioned, not a bad ending, but certainly not as good as the rest of the series. Another cancel.
It was still a solid ending. Yeah. I'll give that one to Aqua. I think this was like the one ending from him I didn't like.
Yeah,
it was just, and it wasn't even just like disappointing, it was, I would say, so actively just bad. It felt insultingly bad.
Yeah, and not even to say like the quality or execution of it, I think is fine, is still good. It's just that the choices made were wrong, and that makes it bad.
I don't even think the execution of it was good, because all of the characters'
emotions.
That's true.
Yeah, that's true. It feels similar to like the last season of Game of Thrones, right, where it's sort of like,
yeah.
Well, you know, I can see how the decisions were like, yeah, I guess that's where the characters were going, but they just like did them. And then, like you just get to the last episode and you're like, oh, who's got a better story than Bran the Broken or whatever.
What happened to Jaime's arc of growing as a person? Yeah.
I mean,
I feel about Oshinoko is like, what happened to Aqua's arc? Sure.
That's a really good comparison, actually. Yeah, if you're familiar with Game of Thrones and you're listening, I think that Aqua and Jaime basically have kind of the same failing, where the author for years and years kind of set up them, you know, growing and being a different person, and at the very end they're like, no, they're not a different person. They're who they always were, and it means they die. So spoilers.
And they die together with their family, I guess.
I don't know. All right, we gotta stop.
All right, let's get out of here. Let's get the fuck out of here.
We gotta stop talking about this. Oshinoko sucks. Don't read it. It's bad. Maybe the anime will say we're gonna do an anime original ending, and everybody's like, oh shit, we gotta watch now. Let's talk about a new series, Weekly Shonen Jump. We pretty much always cover the Weekly Shonen Jump new series, unless they're just pretty awful. This is Sid Craft, Love is a Mystery by Taishi Tsutsui. This is the author of We Never Learn, which was, I think, decently popular back in the day. Maybe not.
Yeah, it was quite popular. Yeah.
So we'll just go through the chapter. It's, I don't want to say it's generic. It's predictable, I guess I would say. We are introduced to the great detective, Sid Craft.
I liked this one.
He is a good main character, I will say. I have some complaints about it. We'll get to at the end, but I do think that the main character has a funny gimmick. It's a funny thing. He works for me. So.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess I have overall thoughts of what I liked about it, but we'll just go through the chapter and
we'll get there at the end. We're also introduced to the Inspector Soufflé Flamberry.
Flamberry,
basically, we sort of get that he's this Sherlock Holmes type. He's a Sherlock Holmes type who can, you know, look at a scene, figure out what the mystery is, blah, blah, blah.
I can buy Sid Craft as a name.
Yeah.
But Soufflé Flamberry... That's wild.
Dragon Ball did irreparable harm to the names of characters. This is, I directly blame Toriyama for this. This is Toriyama's fault. This right.
But, okay, so surely, like, since this is a romance manga, Soufflé Flamberry is one of the love interests, but let me call it from the first page she's introduced. She has no chance with that kind of name.
You don't think?
No, her name is Soufflé Flamberry. She's a joke.
Potential. Yeah. I don't
right? So, you can't say Sid X Soufflé a in like the final rankings 200 chapters in.
If you're thinking of a shipping name, I think Sid Flay is that's a good ship name. So maybe I don't know, maybe it works. Sid Flay from Craftberry. Sid Flay Craftberry, the ship name. You got it. You heard it here first.
It's a mouthful, but okay, we can keep going.
Essentially, you get that she's kind of, she's a little frustrated that he always solves a thing. She's like, I'm going to solve him next time. He figures out that a woman whose husband was killed, I think, or something, was like, she was in the house, and he's like, this is where we get kind of the fun reveal of like, yes, he's this cold Sherlock Holmes type, inviting a dinner, and he's like, guys, like, Miss Jody, it's like, I had a crush on you for so long. He's like, I'm really into romance stuff. I don't want to be a detective. I'm so good at it, but I hate it. I just want to do romance stuff. Being a detective isn't an occupational choice. It's fate.
I love that the fate angle where, because this is like true of the Hercule Poirot's and the Sherlock Holmes of the time. The murder just happens while they're around a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, that's.
There, it is. I'm glad that they just explicitly said it's fate. It's not a choice. It just happens around you. It's in your blood for whatever reason.
Yeah,
like the mystery genre.
Yeah, I mean it's kind of a meta joke, right? Of like, if you're writing Sherlock Holmes, you're writing a mystery guy who solves murders. It's like a murder's gonna happen, and it's not. You know, the characters don't have a will of their own. It's fate. It's got to happen.
Yeah, exactly. It's like an innocent train ride always ends up with a dead body in it, right? Like,
yeah, for sure.
It's like stuff like that.
As long as there's a detective on board.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but we get kind of a flashback to his family, who I guess are also both detectives. He's like, I hate bloody scary cases. I don't want to be a detective. It's like, you have no choice, son. Because great detectives are fated to attract cases, la, la, la. Basically, they're like, if we make him a great detective, he will generate work for himself through this weird magical fate of murders happen around great detectives.
I think it's like what they're saying is he has detective blood in his veins. So yeah,
basically.
It's going to happen anyway, so you might as well solve them.
You might as well be good at it and make a living from it, yeah. We get a little bit of like his first love, which this is a little bit of foreshadowing for later in the chapter. Her parents murdered, adopted by distant relatives. Best friend in school joined drug trafficking. Tutor he respected killed some money. He's just, it's terrible. Great detective fate by foot. I've just been forced to solve cases that crop up around me. And before I knew it, I was dubbed a great detective. basically what we're saying. And he goes like, I'm not into mystery novels. I'm really into romance novels. We meet his assistant who I saw and I go, oh, a cute girl. And her name is Elio Evelyn. And you go, yes, a girl's name. And then for
was
some
was this supposed to be a fake out?
I just think it's one of these very like I think it's a joke that, oh, he's a master detective, but he's oblivious to like His assistant is a girl, and he thinks she's a boy for some reason. We don't really know the why.
Does he think that? Does he think that this is a guy?
Yeah, he absolutely refers to Elio as a boy somewhere. I don't know if I have a page of it, but somewhere when they're in the
bar. Okay.
He's like, wow, he's really popular. He's in all the pictures. He like says this stuff like that. So.
Okay, that makes more sense because I was like, because spoilers at the end, they reveal that her hat falls off and you see her long hair. And I'm like,
it's a girl.
What?
Girls, by the way, like, well, girls what is this wear reveal? Hats. Yeah.
Yeah, I know.
Girls wear hats, by the way. Like, there's not, hats do not make you, I don't know. It's a manga thing, I guess, whatever. But,
yeah. I was just confused because I was like, what is the reveal? Because something got revealed here while Sid was looking away that she is a cute girl. I thought it was just that he didn't know that she was attractive.
Yeah.
Or
yeah. And it's also one of those things where, you know, I was reading it and I was like, oh, okay. They want me to think it's a boy. Sure. Like whatever. It's a boy. Like it's manga, you know, boys can look like girls, girls can look like boys. It doesn't, you know, that's not super big deal. And they at the end, they're like, oh, psych. It was a girl trying to be a boy. And I was like, yeah, I was the same as you. I was like, what was the point of that? Like why, as a reader, it does not affect me. I think the joke is going to be that we as readers all knew that it was a girl, but the master detective couldn't figure it out and can't. And maybe there's more jokes in there somewhere, but I don't know.
That doesn't make any sense, but okay. Yeah. Not a whole lot, I'll buy it.
But yeah. Anyways, we continue. They go to this bar together. Detective Sid Kraft and Evelyn, Elio Evelyn, the boy. and they meet Limerie Rose, who is proprietor of pub. They sort of drink with her. She's very kind of, forward and romantic a little bit with the thing. Inspector Flomberry shows up and is like, there's been another murder. And he's like, I was flirting. Again, I think the main character of this is actually pretty good.
He has a lot of like Harry Dubois energy, mm-hmm. In that, like, there is a scene in Disco Elysium where Harry is trying, like, his brain is doing mental gymnastics in order to believe a beautiful woman's story, even though every part of his brain is chiming in with justifications. And there's like certain parts of his brain are like, everyone is completely biased. She is lying. Here's all the evidence. You are just tricking yourself because she is hot as hell.
Yep.
And like, that's what happens to Sid. It's like, he is like hoping in his heart of hearts that the beautiful woman isn't the murderer.
Yeah, but yeah, he goes to investigate. We get a little bit of, you know, Sherlock Holmes. He was shot. There were shoes. The shoes are important. Whatever. I like that he's like, he's like, wow, you solved it already. And he's like, nope, I was getting sick because there was a dead guy bleeding in front of me and I couldn't take it anymore.
Just like Disco Elysium.
Yeah, Corpse you never used to.
But I'd like to point out that the guy's name was Zuck Hackner.
Oh, yeah. The names in this they're interesting.
I feel like we should just say them out loud because they deserve to be. Yeah.
We also get, what I mentioned, foreshadowing. We do get the another flashback of, like, my first love. I can't remember her face. I don't know about you. When I saw this, I was like, oh, it's the inspector. Like, she has the same haircut. Like, what?
Exactly.
It's like the thing that you do, right?
Obvious.
It's like, people don't change their haircuts 20 years later in anime and manga. If they do, it's impossible, so.
I don't know why they give Sid a nickname when his name is one syllable.
Sai? Yeah.
Yes, it's odd. It's long.
I bet in Japanese it's two syllables, though. Because Sid in Japanese would be like Sidu or something, and Sai would be one. I don't know. Maybe. That's my Japanese excuse, I guess. But yeah, he gets back and runs into the bar hostess lady, and she's like, oh, you should take me on a date. I'm very romantically involved with you. I love you. Blah, blah, blah. And then he's like, you, Mr. Zuck Hackner, you murdered him, didn't you? He's like, I wish I had stayed. Like you mentioned, he's like, I wish I couldn't. I wish I didn't have to see it, but I can see it. Hammer the Iron Laws, and he talks about all these laws that they have to do. Saw that her arm was hurt. He mentioned earlier that she was using her other arm, blah, blah, blah. And he's like, of course there's a trick around that can deceive the eyes of the great detective Sid Kraft. Like, oh, she never found me attractive at all. Go figure. And then end of the chapter here, we get again, the hat comes off and surprise, it's a girl, even though again, girls wear hats.
That was like the silly, like, I think I really liked this chapter until the end, which started revealing the romantic beats of it.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, wow, that was weird. That was a little dumb.
Well, and you know what this kind of reminds me of? What was that like Western romance gag manga?
Where Sheriff Evans.
Yes, yeah. Sheriff Evans. This like reminds me of, my opinion, like a worse version of that. Combined with, I guess, We Never Learn, Nisekoi, kind of some of the other things we mentioned.
Yeah, about. Yeah, I'd agree.
Sheriff Evans was one of those like, oh yeah, he's really good at his job, and she's kind of trying to catch up to him. And I think, didn't they also turn out to be childhood friends? I don't remember in that one. But
no, they're just rivals. But like, yeah. I get why Sheriff Evans feels better in your eyes, and my eyes too, is because it's fully a gag manga.
Yeah.
With like very slight romance subplot, it leans on the romance. It's starting to lean on the romance. I liked the first 90% of it more before they introduced the romance stuff because the gag worked for me.
Yeah, and we'll have to see. I think it's kind of hard to tell what is going to be the balance between romance and gags because it was pretty gag filled. I would say.
Why I liked the first 90%. The last part felt a little clunky, but that's okay. I think establish that it's a romance.
Yeah, exactly. You know? I think they're just planting the seeds for like, hey, I know that you were reading a gag manga. This is also a romance manga. Here are the seeds for that. I think they're planting that down. So, we'll see.
Detective Flomberries, she's the childhood friend who made a promise with Sid when they were kids to be great detectives together. That's Nisekoi. That's what happened in Nisekoi.
Yeah, can we stop doing this? I can't remember their face. His nickname was Sai. Like, come on. Like, what is it with people's memory in Japan that they make childhood friends and then they turn 18 and they're like, I've forgotten the face and haircut of every person I knew before I was age 11. And it just like, it's this, I don't know, it's just such contrived drama of like, it is the like amnesia crutch, but for romance manga, right? The amnesia thing of like, oh, I just want a character to start from scratch in his story, so I'll give him amnesia and they'll learn that way. It's like, that is a crutch. People have used that for ages. It's, I would argue, not a good writing technique anymore. I would highly encourage people to not do amnesia stories at all. It's a crutch that's unrealistic, and this is the same way. It's a crutch to be like, they were my childhood friend, but I don't remember them. Like, at least I will give props here to Negi Haruba, who wrote Quintessential Quintuplets. This kind of happens in Quintessential Quintuplets, but it makes sense because in Quintessential Quintuplets, the MC met the five quints when they were younger, and he had like a special outing with one of them. But because they're identical quintuplets, he doesn't know which one he had that like special day with, and so the sort of mystery of quints is like him figuring out which one of the quints that look a little different now, which one of them did I go on that special day with, because that's the one I'm in love with. And so like that's the mystery. So he didn't forget what they looked like. It's just they're identical quintuplets and they looked exactly the same, and I had a special moment with one of them when I was a child, and I remember that, and I remember that it was one of them, but I don't remember which one. And it's like that makes sense. This one doesn't.
Yeah, I completely agree. It doesn't, I don't love this plot line. I think it's more forgivable if Nisekoi hadn't done this exact
tons of romance things do this. Yeah. I was childhood friends and I forgot who they were. Like I'm pretty sure this is happening in Himaten right now. I think, well, there's a childhood friend character. I don't know if it's actually they forgot about him, but yeah, I don't know.
I guess in terms of romance writing, I suppose I find the concept of fate to be lame. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's just personal preference, but this childhood friend that you made this promise with that influenced your life choices into adulthood, reconvening and getting together at the end is like too fate-pilled for me to...
Yeah.
Like, I feel like you should just build a dynamic and have chemistry instead of having this pre-established, long-running promise with an unknown figure that happens to be your... I don't know. I don't know if that criticism makes sense to you, but it's not my thing.
Yeah, let me... I understand it, and I'll make a comparison that maybe will help. This is the sort of, oh, we're introduced to a childhood friend character who made a promise to be in love later. To me, this is like... This is like if there was a sports manga, and you're in, like, at the very start, you're introduced to, like, a team that is shown to be like, flash forward, wow, I'm so glad we beat that team in the finals, and that's the end of our story. And then flashback to how the sports team got like all the way there. Like, well, I know they win in the end. I know that they're going to get there. Like, yeah, sure, part of it is like journey, you know, like I want to see the journey, but this is like, it just tells you the ending. Like, the problem is the interesting solution to this is to set up a story like this with this childhood friend and have them not win. I think the problem with that is, as you and I are already expressing here, introducing this in chapter one is already frustrating because I think like the end is, it's hurt. Like those two are going to be the romance pair, right? Like,
Cause it's fate.
Yeah. Cause it's exactly because it's set up as fate. They have the history.
And you establish that detectives believe in fate and it's mm-hmm. true. It's real because in this universe, but don't, I like to say we harped on this for a bit. Don't take this as criticism for the chapter. We're just complaining about a romance manga trope. This is such a minor gripe.
It's full of them, though. I mean, to give final thoughts, like, this doesn't make it, I don't think, in Weekly Shonen Jump. I mean, I think it's fine. On the back of Himaten, which I think we're seeing is pretty like decently successful. Like I think it got a reprint of volume one, and that's a very, again, sort of generic across the plate. Like Himaten is just fucking Nisekoi again, right? Like, but it's been, you know, 10, you know, five or now how many years has it been since Nisekoi ended? Like maybe 6 or 7 years. It's been a while. But like Weekly Shonen Jump could use another like Nisekoi, right? And this one, I think, is not as good as Himaten. Like, and I didn't think Himaten was like exceptional or anything. I thought it was okay. I just don't see this one catching on. I don't know. I'm not sure. It wasn't like super funny. It wasn't like, wow, this is actually laugh out loud funny. It was like kind of cute romance tropes we've seen before. Weird names. Like, I didn't think it, you know, the art is fine. It's good, but it's not great. I don't know. I really did nothing.
I liked it. I'd say way more than you probably, but I am also a fan of the mystery genre, so a lot of the meta in jokes worked probably even better for me. I thought they were like a little bit extra funny. But I wonder how it feels to like someone who's not a huge mystery fan.
Yeah. Or like romance. Like if you read a lot of romance, I don't know if I read more romance than you or not. I enjoy romance a lot. Like maybe a little bit, maybe a little bit more of the kind of like generic romance stuff, but I don't know. This just feels like I've read this before. Like the only thing really interesting and different about this is like, it's Sherlock Holmes who likes romance novels, but everything else about it is like the childhood friend. They already know each other. Like, I guess they're not in high school. Thank God. Like I'll give it bonus points for that. But yeah, I don't know. I just wasn't thinking
about the romance aspect of it. So like, I think it's like the non-romance stuff works. And I like him striking out with beautiful women who end up being like suspects or criminals. Or,
see, if that's the gag every time, that's a good gag. If it's like, oh, he meets a beautiful woman and maybe she's into me and then she's the murderer. Like if that's the gag every time, maybe that's fun, but I don't know. It just doesn't, I just don't think that this is going to strike a chord with everyone with enough people to keep it going for very long, but I don't know. I could be wrong. We'll see.
You know, it will strike a chord with me if it continues the ratio of mystery, gag mystery to romance. It like, because this was about like, this is 90-10. I think it should be 80-20, mm-hmm. like 80% mystery, gag, comedy, and then 20% romance. I think it'll be more like 50-50 as we go through.
Yeah. We'll kind of have to see. Cause yeah, like this is not a chapter one that I think you can really feel the way the rest of the serialization will go. It's really just introduction to kind of characters and ideas. So chapter two will tell us more, as I feel like we say that a lot of times with two chapter ones, but for this one specifically, I think chapter two and three will tell us, and we'll see how it, I mean, could be better. There's lots of things where chapter one is, I've not loved, and chapter two was a lot better. So we'll see.
You did convince me on one thing. I started this conversation thinking that Soufflé Flamberry had no chance because of her dumb name. But now that she is his fated person, you might actually see Craftberry, the ship. By the end of this.
What did we say it was? I need to look at it because it was a really
good... It's just Craftberry, right? That's like the best name
for
that.
No, Soufflé Craftberry, yeah.
You said that and I nodded in the corner, but I thought differently.
Yeah, Soufflé Craftberry. It's happening. It's the ship name.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know. I also don't know if we're getting a new series next week or for the next 2 weeks. Like usually they come... usually come in groups of three or four. So I don't know. I think maybe next week we'll get another one, but we'll see.
I'll check out the second chapter of this. I thought it was kind of fun.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely will give it, I'll give it three chapters and see. That's yeah. all I got in me for this one. But yeah, I don't know. Anything else to say on, what the fuck is this called? Sid Craft, Love is a Mystery.
No, I thought it was a good time.
This is like the, it's like the subtitle of like, nobody calls it Kaguya-sama, Love is War. It's always just like Kaguya. So maybe it's just Sid Craft.
Do you remember what Kaguya was called before it got the Love is War official? Oh, like
the fan translation one?
Yeah, it was
God, called, it was long. What was it? Yeah.
Kaguya wants to be confessed to, a genius battle between love and war or something like that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I want to see if somebody has the alternate. Kaguya wants to be confessed to. I guess that's the official. Yeah, no, I do remember that it used to be.
Yeah.
Yeah, battle of geniuses, love and war. I don't know. It's very different languages we're translating into here. But yeah, so yeah, anything else on Sid Craft? Love is a mystery.
Love is war. Yeah. No, I enjoyed it. I thought it was some dumb fun, and I think fans of the mystery genre would like it.
Yeah, I don't. I thought it was bad. So
fair enough.
Okay, let's talk about our last thing. Is pretty quick here. This is Mane Mane Nichi Nichi by Yamamoto Soichiro, previous author of Teasing Master Takagi-san and other large four-headed girls gag manga. I am kind of surprised about how much more I am liking this series than everything else they've ever done. And I think I know why, but I don't know if you agree with me.
I think this is this author's best work. And it's just started. I read all of Takagimoto and the chess when will I even make his move.
I like the chess one, I think, the most. But
yeah, so it was pretty good. I think this is the best one.
I think I do too. Do you know why?
It's just girls being dudes. It's just you don't really see, you see like Nishi Bros, where it's just guys being dudes and having like their normal daily life, shitposty conversations and being funny with each other. This is like that for chicks.
Yeah.
And I really like that. It feels like a Seinfeld episode.
Sometimes. Yeah, I think it's even simpler than that, but it's basically the same. I think this is better because it's only girls. Like, and I think that in basically every other series of Yamamoto Soichiro that I've read, the girls are the interesting characters and the guys are pretty boring and flat. And so this character is just three girls and no guys, and that makes it way better. Like, there's just no guys and the romance is like with a faceless dude who doesn't matter. And so it's just three girls, and that's like, that makes it better. The guy just like, he can write girls better and more fun, and the guys are boring in this series. So, or her series. I actually don't know if they're male or female, but yeah, I think like because it's just girls, it's three times better than if it was a girl and a boy interacting in like in their other series.
I'm also forgetting the black haired girl's name, but I think she is like my favorite character that he has written.
She's
great.
I like them all. I think I said this to you when we were talking earlier in DM or something. They're all three of these girls are like a different kind of stupid, and it makes for fun situations where like, yeah, the black haired girl is like really enthusiastic and trying really hard, but she's just dumb. Like she's like just an idiot, which is fun. Whereas the like, the short fluffy haired girl is like, she seems really cute, but she's like, she's a man eater and like very kind of, we learn in this chapter, which is funny, that she's a masochist apparently. Right. She's like, it's painful to see them work out a lot, and she is getting enjoyment from that.
And the brown girl is she is like the most empathetic one, who doesn't talk like needlessly. She's like careful about her word choice and what she says and when she speaks, but she most of the time has a grasp on what's going on, or would if her friends weren't kind of unhinged.
In a normal situation, she's normal, but she's around two unhinged girls, and so she's also unhinged.
They're all very likable, I think.
I think so, too. Yeah, I really like all three of them. I think it's great. I thought this was a great funny chapter because they're trying to sort of like match the boys' dedication by doing extra workouts, and they go to 50 sit-ups or whatever, and the fluffy-haired girl is like, you didn't go all the way up on five of those, so why don't you do five more? It's like, and she's like, come on, you got this. He's like, okay, we're going to do it now. And she's like, it's kind of hard to say, but like, why don't you do five more? It's like, that looks so painful. It's like, look at her face. She's being strict, but it's just turning her on.
Yeah, I love it. She's like pushing him to do better, and then like it's working. Here. And then when they see how horny she is about all of it, they're like, okay, we're done here. It's like that. This ain't happening no more.
Yeah, this also has a good. You mentioned Nietzsche Bros, and I think it also happens in Nietzsche Joe and other good kind of group comedies. Is that and this is really a thing in sitcoms. You see this a lot where it's like if you have a storyline with three people. Like you kind of explore every dynamic of 2v1, right? Like you do 1 and 2 against 3, 2 and 3 against 1, 1 and 3 against 2. And like all of those different dynamics are different and interesting. And that's kind of what we've got here. And we've seen it in the past, right? Where it's like, oh, sometimes it's fluffy hair and the black haired girl against the tan girl. Sometimes it's, you know, tan and black hair against fluffy, like in this chapter. So it's just really like, I don't know, the dynamic, I think it's just like so far, this is, I think, their best work. Just girls. Yeah. Like you mentioned, just three girls, and just they write girls better, and I don't know, it's just quality. So
it's, and it reminds me of Nishi Bros because it's like very much a daily life manga. It's slice of life comedy through and through, whereas Nishi Joe does have the girls, but it's like so absurd.
It's more sketch comedy for like, yeah, I'd say for sure. Yeah,
exactly. But I think there's like a market for this, and hopefully it's doing well.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, all of their series have done pretty well in the past, so I would assume this is, but I don't know. But yeah, it's also they're all just stupid, which, like, that helps. Like,
yeah.
It also just helps that they're all different kinds of dumb, which I think gives it a lot of power. So, cool. Anything else you want to say about Mane Mane Nichi Nichi?
No, I read it every week, and I get a kick out of it. I like it.
Yeah, it's good, short, light. I like it. I like it a lot. No news this week. There were, like, a couple of anime. There was, like, a trailer for Sakamoto Days, and Ranger got a season 2, which we're excited about, but nothing super big. Some other stuff got follow-up seasons, but yeah, nothing super big there. So we'll just move on to one more thing.
One thing about Sakamoto Days I will mention is that I saw a post on Reddit on my feed that said, hey, Japanese user here. Why does it seem like Westerners seem really excited for Sakamoto Days, whereas Japanese people didn't like the preview for Sakamoto Days? And everyone was like, wait, Japanese people didn't like it? Why? And they're like, oh, because it doesn't capture the bombastic movements portrayed in the manga.
Yeah.
I guess I didn't think about, I mean, like, I know we talk about how the anime needs to capture it, and maybe I didn't see the preview they're talking about, but it's like, it's just a preview, right? We don't know.
Yeah. And it's going to be difficult. I think the big issue you run into with Sakamoto Days being adapted as an anime is that it's only a high octane battle manga. Like there is like one or two chapters of downtime and every other chapter is action. And
but
anime,
we got
like,
on Dead Unlock. You know, that's like a all action too, right?
It has a little bit more downtime and talking, I would say, at least in the parts that I've read. But it's just like the drawing that it's, I don't want to like discredit anyone. Drawing action is not quite as hard as animating action with the studio. So
for sure.
So the manga is executed exceptionally, and I think making it into an anime and being able to match these kind of quality of all the fights and the quality of the stuff is difficult. It's also, I mean, the thing that Sakamoto Days really excels at is that it's the flow of its action and its paneling and sort of understanding the fight that's going on, even though it's wild and crazy and, you know, pulling in all these interesting ideas, is that like the manga is executed so well and so much better than how a lot of other action manga do it, that like that's its strong point. Like its strong point is not only does it have cool, interesting fights with like diverse, like weird weapons and fighting styles and all that stuff. It's also like exceptionally well executed on. And if you're reading it in panel form, it's amazing. And the thing about animation is that, well, animation should already flow better than panels. It should already have all that stuff. So you kind of have to like it. You're starting from a higher bar and you have to jump even higher for people to be like, oh, this is just as good as the manga, because the manga is so good at doing action and panel and flow. The anime has to be even better at doing flow and action and paneling. And yeah, I mean, like this, the sad fact of the matter is that this probably needs to be Jujutsu Kaisen season 2 levels of action, like prowess. And it's the preview that I saw did not look like that, but it doesn't mean it'll be bad. Also, the start of the series is a little more contained. So I don't know, like, we need One Punch Man season one to really do justice to Sakamoto Days. And I don't think we'll get that. And I think the Japanese see that, but I saw some comments also about from English people saying like, yeah, I don't know, this doesn't look quite as good as the Sakamoto Days.
I think it's just too soon to say, right? Cause we'll have to wait and see how some of the like pivotal moments are animated. But
yeah,
I think One Punch Man season one kind of broke a lot of our brains in that our expectations and just general bar got raised for action series.
Well, also, and I mean, like Demon Slayer season one and Jujutsu Kaisen season two. And to be honest, like Fire Force season one, you want to see some good fucking action like that? Fire Force season one fucking rocks. There's a lot of good action, but it's like you get one or two a year. They're from big studios with a lot of budget. And I don't think Sakamoto Days has that. So we'll see. But yeah, you're right. It's too soon to say.
I hope we're just being hasty here, and I hope it ends up being good.
I hope it is good too, because I want more people to be into it, because the manga is fucking great. So,
yeah, for real. Anyway, that's not news. It's just a post I saw.
Yeah, no, it's a good thing to talk about. Let's see. This will be my one more thing for this week and one more week. Arcane Season 2, Part 2. It still rocks. It's still great. They are following classic three-act structure, and so this was part two, and so it ended very badly, and people are not complaining online about the story, but complaining about characters and their choices and stuff, but I still loved it. I thought it was great, so.
Wait, let me guess with my archaic League of Legends knowledge. That's Vi, of course.
Yeah.
That's Warwick.
Warwick, yeah.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Yep.
He turns into a werewolf this season.
Yeah, I won't spoil too much, but yes, essentially.
I mean, it's not really I guess it is because it's a show now.
Yeah, well, I've always
known him as a dog, so it's like,
he's a werewolf man, but yeah, you need to watch it because it's great. It's really good. It's Arcane and the Spider-Verse movies are probably probably the top two best animated things I've ever seen. Like, they're just so good. Like
that is like an insanely high bar. The Spider-Verse movies. I'll have to check it out.
Arcane is different, but like, yeah, it is Spider-Verse movie level of like creativity and animation is unique and interesting, and the story and acting is also just fucking amazing. Like they have the actresses who play the two leads have like popped off. Ella Purnell plays Jinx. She was the lead in the Fallout TV show. She's done a bunch of movies.
Oh, yeah.
She's Jinx. And then Vi.
What a smoke show.
Yeah. And then Vi is Hailee Steinfeld, who is in like, she was already pretty big when she did this, but she was in like, was it Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.? Oh, no. She was, is it Hallie Steinfeld? Hailee. It is Hailee Steinfeld. She's the girl in the Hawkeye TV show. I haven't seen anything.
I'm looking at her IMDb. I haven't seen anything she's in, really.
Okay, yeah, filmography. I'm gonna see this. Kate Bishop. There you go. Oh, she was Gwen Stacy in Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse. So you've seen that. If that tells you how good she actually is at voice acting, which she's really, really good.
Oh yeah. She's great as Gwen. I just haven't seen her filmography, but yeah, that sounds cool.
Yeah, but I mean, they're both popping.
I just have a bias that lives in me that I don't want to give Riot one, and that's my cross to bear. I should give them one
if it makes you feel any better. This show is fucking breaking the bank for them. Like I don't know if they actually I hope in my heart of hearts that they are doing this because they see the artistic value of doing something like this, and they don't care that this series cost $250 million to make.
You know what? That's cool. That's cool. I don't even root against them. Do cool stuff with your money.
Yeah. I hope that's why they're doing it, and they're not doing it because, like, this is great brand investment, and we will see a return of more than $250 million over X years. But to be honest, like, $250 million on two seasons of a television show that's, you know, how long, it like six, like 12 hours total. $250 million is what like one Marvel movie costs. So I think they're getting a pretty good thing for their buck, to be honest, especially with how many people talk about it and how big the show is.
I think your game lives or dies with its relevancy, right? Mm-hmm. And anything that keeps League in the public eye. I think when you have more money than God, then you should be spending it to ensure your brand is relevant. And
yeah,
it sounds like they're doing that in cool ways with Arcane. I got to watch it.
You really need to watch it. It's so good. But yeah, I mean, I've seen people on Twitter being like, okay, I guess I got to download League of Legends and try it out. And everyone's like, don't do this. As much as we complain about it and like as a League recovering League player, like I would not recommend anyone play that game. But also, like, if this brings in new people, then they're, you know, right, seeing a monetary gain from it. So,
yeah, I did think about that. It's like, because this is like a borderline impossible game to get into, like on an island, right? Without friends playing and teaching you the ropes. Yeah. You know, it's like, it is a big ask. So, yeah, I wonder how this like bolsters League numbers.
I don't know. I'd be curious, but it doesn't matter. The show is good. If they put the writer on this, Christian Link something, if they keep making television shows that are, even if they're like 70 or 80% as good as Arcane, that's worthwhile television. Because Arcane is like, it's really fucking good. Like, it's so good. I could talk.
That's
about
awesome to hear, man.
Anyways, tell me, you watched a movie that I thought you had maybe seen before, but you had not. Tell me about American Psycho.
No. So, I don't know what clicked in my brain. I felt like watching a thriller. So I put on American Psycho. I knew it was memed a little bit. I saw the business card scene, very funny, prior to watching it. And I thought it would be like a little goofy, but like a thriller horror thing. That movie's a comedy. It's just like funny the whole way through. It was like satirical all the way through about how these Wall Street jackasses are just like complete jokes and sociopathic. And like, there's no part of this that was thrilling or scary. It was just funny. I don't know how long it's been since you watched this, Bruce,
like maybe
but
eight, 7 or 8 years, but I've seen it a couple. I've seen it 3 or 4 times. So I know the movie. It's great. It's great.
People forget. Okay. So there's this one scene that I thought was very funny. There's a ton, but like there's one outside is he is like unraveling and he goes up to an ATM and tries to use it and it's like not working. And a cat comes up to him and it meows at him. He picks up the cat and pets it a little bit and the cat's happy and purring. And then he tries to like put it in the ATM.
The ATM asks for it, doesn't it? The ATM is like, feed me a cat. And he's like,
yeah,
he's
yeah, like, okay. Exactly.
Yeah.
And the cat doesn't fit and he gets pissed off at the cat. And then he takes out a gun and points it at the cat's head. An old woman walks out of the bank and says, oh my God. He then turns the gun, shoots her, drops the cat, and runs away. And I'm like, yeah.
That whole scene towards the end where he is like really truly unraveling is what is like true like satire and goofy. Like that's the goofiest part of the movie, but it's like, yeah, I this is a great, great movie.
Yeah, and so afterwards I saw like a fan theory that's like, oh, this wasn't all in his head. This is just how the world treats the 1%. Their consequences have no actions. And I think that was like a really good theory if you disregard the ATM machine asking to be fed a cat.
Yeah, the book was written, I want to say like early 90s. This movie came out in like 90... maybe like 2000, 2001, like late 90s, 2000 era. And like the whole thing that it's satirizing is the exact kind of people who Bateman and his friends, quote unquote, are in the movie, who are these like guys who are so disconnected from reality. They're on cocaine all the time. All they think about is business and looking good and competing with each other. It's just looking at them as like, these guys are subhuman. It like literally a satire of like, They're not all murderers. As like the movie's almost 25 years old. We're just gonna fucking spoil it. Like he doesn't kill anybody. Is the whole fucking thing at the end, right? Is that he has not actually done any bad deeds. He's just so disconnected from reality because he lives in a world where money and the people around you disconnect you from reality. And like he's just disconnected from reality in a kind of different way. And that's a satire, right? Is that these rich guys in these high rises in New York City that deal with money and only talk to each other and do cocaine and go to these high end clubs and hire, you know, strippers and prostitutes. Like they are so disconnected from the reality of life and all of that, that this guy in particular detaches in a different way, which is that he imagines himself killing people. Or maybe he does kill people, but not the guy at the end. I mean, there's arguments to be made, but yeah, I don't know.
Who cares? Ultimately, it doesn't matter if he killed people or not. The point of the movie is still the same. Yeah, I mean, which is what you just mentioned, yeah. Is that they are emulating humanity. They don't have the lived experiences due to their circumstances to feel the things that we feel as normal people.
I'll push back a little bit on that, because it kind of does matter that in the end he has not actually killed the dude he thinks he has, and implied that whole night that we mentioned where he killed all those people, that didn't happen. He didn't kill those people. He didn't kill anybody in the movie, is kind of the implication. I think that's important because it shows that it isn't that being this rich and disconnected turns you into a murderer. It's that being this rich and disconnected makes you so disconnected from real life that you imagine yourself being a murderer and you think that's fun because, yeah. I don't, it's,
and you believe it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's hard to say in a short review thing, but
yeah,
an incredible satire film. Like, it is one of the greatest, I would say. Like, I love American Psycho.
So if anyone hasn't watched it, give it, I'm sure most of you have, looking at our demos, like, 20s and 30s years, 30 year olds. And it's like a pretty popular movie. It's like memed on all the time. But if you haven't seen it, I go in expecting a good laugh. I don't know.
Yeah, it's very good. And if you want to see people who completely do not understand why American Psycho was made and what it was about, there is an American Psycho 2 that does not understand it, which is just kind of a slap.
What? Oh, okay.
I think it's it has somebody famous in it. Hold on. I think it's a girl on it, right? Is Mila Kunis in this? Hold on.
That's actually kind of good casting. I don't know why.
Yeah, it is. It's Mila Kunis, American Psycho 2. Everything I've heard about this is just like, it's just a slasher horror, or like a slasher thriller. And it's like, that's not, like, American Psycho is bloody, but it's not really that scary. I would say it's not scary at all. But.
You can tell that a movie missed a point when you see an 11% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Ooh,
like,
that's
of the first
low.
One.
Yeah,
it's very low.
That's low. Okay, cool. Anything else about American Psycho?
Nah.
Let's get out of here. Hey, thanks everybody for listening or watching. Don't forget to leave us feedback, comments, upvote, thumbs up, all that jazz. Subscribe. Thank you. Check out Twitter, Patreon, which is in the description. Thank you for being with us yet again this week.
Goodbye.
And don't forget to read more.